Welcome to this Tuesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In the show today, Taylor Charleston will have a report regarding the issue of whether or not satellite-based evapotranspiration measurements are actually accurate for citrus crops. I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Last week, Mike Thompson of California, Dan Newhouse of Washington, Jim Costa of California, Jimmy Panetta of California, and Cindy Axne of Iowa, along with 17 other members, introduced legislation to reauthorize the Emergency Relief Program, formerly known as WIP Plus, for natural disasters that occurred in 2022. The Emergency Relief Program, or ERP, offers critical assistance to agricultural producers, including grape growers, whose crops were impacted by smoke taint. California wine grape growers appreciate the leadership and commitment of Congressman Thompson and other members of the California delegation to provide disaster assistance for those who suffer crop losses due to wildfires and other natural disasters. Through this tremendous leadership, growers have received much-needed aid for the past disasters, and they applaud Representative Thompson's efforts to enact assistance for the 2022 crop year, according to Natalie Collins, California Association of Wine Grape Growers Interim President. ERP is a vital program that provides desperately needed payments to agricultural producers to offset losses from wildfires, drought, hurricane, derechos, freeze, polar vortex, excessive heat, and other qualifying natural disasters. The relief is critical as prolonged drought, severe weather events, and natural disasters continue to wreak havoc on crops and livestock. The bill is being endorsed by the National Farmers Union. California has a number of formal acts and statutes in the Food and Agriculture Code, including the Canela Environmental Farming Act of 1995. This act provides five legislative findings and declarations, including that environmental laws should be based on the best scientific evidence gathered from public and private sources, and the evidence should include the net environmental impact provided by agriculture. It provides definitions for the following terms: agricultural activities, department, panel, and secretary. It requires the department to establish and oversee an environmental farming program. The program must provide incentives to farmers whose practices promote the well-being of ecosystems, air quality, and wildlife and their habitat. The department may assist the compilation of scientific evidence from public and private sources, including the scientific community, industry, conservation organizations, and federal, state, and local agencies, identifying the net environmental impacts that agriculture creates for the environment. The department must serve as a depository of this information and provide it to federal, state, and local governments as needed. It requires the secretary to convene a 9-member scientific advisory panel on environmental finding to advise the secretary on the implementation of the Healthy Soils Program, the State Water Efficiency and Enhancement Program established by the department from monies to assist federal, state, and local government agencies as appropriate or necessary on issues relating to the impact of agricultural practices on air, water, and wildlife habitat. In addition, members of the panel must be highly qualified and professionally active or engaged in the conduct of scientific research. It requires the department, in consultation with the panel, to establish and oversee a healthy soils program. The program must seek to optimize climate benefits while supporting the economic viability of California agriculture by providing incentives, including but not limited to loans, grants, research and technical assistance, and educational materials and outreach to farmers whose management practices contribute to healthy soils and result in net long-term on-farm greenhouse gas benefits. The program may also include the funding of on-farm demonstration projects that further the goals of the program. In addition, the department is required to implement the program and quantify greenhouse gas emission reductions in accordance with the funding guidelines developed by the State Air Resources Board and the quantification methods developed by the State Air Resources Board. The department may pursue public and private sources to support the Healthy Soils Program. The following terms are defined there: greenhouse gas benefits, healthy soils, and on-farm demonstration projects. It also created the Climate Smart Agriculture account in the Department of Food and Agriculture Fund, which consists of monies made available from state, federal, industry, philanthropy, and private sources. The controller may use the monies in the Climate Smart Agriculture account for cash flow loans to the general fund. It provides definitions for these terms: grant program, programs, technical assistance, and technical assistance providers. In addition, the secretary is required to make available not less than 5% of the funds appropriated to the department for programs, but not more than $5 million to the grant program for specified purposes. The department is also required to establish a technical assistance grant program to provide funds to technical assistance providers and to provide technical assistance to program applicants, including but not limited to conducting initial program outreach to farmers and ranchers and assisting farmers and ranchers to submit grant applications under the programs to the department and with project design, development, and implementation. Intelligistics, which has built a suite of smart digital products to monitor and improve efficiency for logistics, supply chain, and cold chain management for companies producing and selling perishable products, now brings our technology solutions to bear on a common choke point in cold storage facility operations. Whether it's because of traffic in a yard or facilities not ready to load or unload when a truck arrives, a truck that is not moving is not making money for the grower or shipper or the end user, according to Rayo Mandava, Intelligistics chairman and president. He says their IntelliDock product has led to tremendous improvements for outbound logistics, but the customers are telling them that they're still losing productivity from inbound field trucks waiting to unload and return to the field where harvest crews were ready to load them again. The problem is exacerbated by the current shortage of truck drivers and regulatory limitations on how many hours that drivers can work. In response, Intelligistics has just released a new field truck monitoring system, IntelliField, that combines wireless sensors to smart hubs and data aggregation and simple dashboard reporting to give yard and facility managers real-time visibility to field truck status, product information, and location. Combined with IntelliDock, access to this information limits truck wait times, reduces yard traffic, limits bottlenecks, and gets fresh perishable products out of the heat, into the cooler, and beyond faster. These two systems work together or independently depending on facility needs and can also interface with facility owners' inventory management and order fulfillment software systems to provide necessary product and labor visibility and further expedite the movement of trucks and product in the supply chain. IntelliField and IntelliDock are part of the suite of advanced and innovative digital technologies developed and effectively implemented by Intelligistics throughout the perishables industry for optimizing supply chain and cold chain efficiency, enhancing product quality, and increasing profitability. The solutions provide the bookends to digitizing the grower shipper's supply chain, thus creating opportunity to create tremendous benefits related to digitization of company chain and digital transformation. Fertera, a global sales and marketing network formed in 2021, marked its first year of operation by finalizing the acquisition of a major Chilean fruit exporter, Subsol. The event opens the door to meaningful new investments, signaling Fertera's confidence in Subsol's growth potential and the strength of its leadership. There are a number of new packing and varietal expansion initiatives in the works, but most immediately, Fertera is laser-focused on adding acreage to Subsol's existing footprint. Negotiations to acquire additional operations are close to being signed, which will exponentially increase Subsol's export volume as a start, particularly with avocados and citrus. These pending land acquisition projects go towards the founding goal of Fertera to supply high-quality fruit in the varieties that customers demand 365 days a year. To that end, Subsol's new land will be in multiple Chilean geographies and in different growing zones. This will further diversify the company's supply base and will give Subsol even greater flexibility to pack and sell. Subsol already dominates in table grapes and is the largest Chilean exporter of that crop in the U.S., Europe, Latin America, and Asia. Other offerings include citrus, avocados, cherries, pomegranates, and kiwis. To date, the company has shipped 10 million boxes of fruit to customers in more than 40 countries.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
In California, information on evapotranspiration, or ET, of micro-irrigated citrus orchards is limited and outdated. Citrus ET and water productivity vary considerably due to the climatic conditions, tree density, row orientation, canopy vigor and management, which regulate energy interception as well as tree transpiration and fruit production. Currently, the accuracy of water demand estimates considered acceptable by different citrus production stakeholders and water resource actors is unclear. Alongside several irrigation districts and groundwater sustainability agencies, or GSAs, recently adopted satellite remote sensing methods, which may lead to uncertain and highly inaccurate citrus ET estimates, so far so that this has been noticed by researchers and growers alike. Daniele Zaccaria, an associate cooperative extension specialist in the Department of Land, Air, and Water Resources at UC Davis, even submitted a proposal to the Citrus Research Board to investigate just this, the uncertainties and errors of citrus ET estimated with satellite remote sensing methods.
There are multiple sources of uncertainties and errors with the remote sensing based models, and especially with satellite remote sensing based models for estimating ET of different crops. Specifically, in citrus, there are additional complications, but I would say the first source of errors might be the low spatial resolution with the current satellite that are being used for this estimate. We got a pixel resolution of 30 meters by 30 meters. And so within a pixel, the satellite capture a picture, I would say, that includes a tree canopy, a foliage, and soil background, and whatever is left on the soil, kind of a residues of vegetation. So depending on the model that is used, all this can create some confounding effect. So at the end of the story, within a 30 by 30, meter pixel, you get some canopy, some soil background, and some reflectance from the vegetation residues that are in the row middle, and so you get a blend of different things, and so sometimes it's very difficult to separate the soil background with respect to the canopy. Tree canopy foliage. So this is the first source of error. So you need to do a lot of pre-processing of the images in order to refine and to eliminate the soil background.
The project will look to compare evapotranspiration estimates from satellite-based models against ground-based ET measurements that will serve three purposes: quantifying the discrepancies between the satellite ET and ground-measured ET, identifying the sources of these discrepancies, and revisiting the parameters of the various algorithms or models, and exploring the opportunity for calibration and validation. Zaccaria hopes this information will be crucial to improving water management and competitiveness in citrus production areas characterized by severely overdrafted aquifers and highly variable surface water supplies.
To my knowledge, it hasn't been sufficient ground truthing, calibration, and validation of this model on this specific species and in the specific growing condition of the San Joaquin Valley and Southern California, also the Imperial Valley. So the citrus production industry is very concerned about the inaccuracy and would like to see better, an improved inaccuracy of the estimate. Our group from UC, and especially with UC Davis, we've been measuring ET with the residual of energy balance method through a combination of surface renewal and eddy covariance equipment in the eastern side of the San Joaquin Valley for about 5 years now. And we plan to extend this ground-based data collection and analysis for the next couple of seasons. Now, what we've seen comparing satellite ET estimate with respect to our ground measurement is that the level of inaccuracy or relative difference are alarming. And I'm talking about plus and minus 50%, up to 60% of differences in monthly values. Now, when most of the remote sensing based ET is presented at the seasonal cumulative level, the difference between ground measurement and remote sensing ET estimates, somehow they offset. And at the end of the story, you got a seasonal ET that differs about 15 to 20% with respect to ground measurement. So this is a significant difference. And I don't know, in the current condition of the California water resource community, who can afford that, that significant level of inaccuracy and errors. But when you move to monthly basis or biweekly basis, those differences become extremely large. So 50, 60% relative differences. And so this is alarming because, they might lead to very unrealistic policies or unrealistic implication in terms of water supply, especially with the implementation of the SGMA regulation. This is going to really penalize a lot of growers and a lot of water district in terms of not providing realistic water supply for maintaining the citrus acreage and the water and the citrus productivity in the San Joaquin Valley in Southern California. So what we plan to do is, first of all, to appraise and estimate the relative differences between the ground-based measurement and the remote sensing ET estimate, and then understand where are the sources of uncertainties in what part of the process, and especially evaluate different part of the crop growth cycle. And once we quantify the relative difference or the magnitude of inaccuracy, then we would like to propose correction, and they are based on additional validation, additional ground truthing and calibration, and somehow provide recommendation on how to improve those processes. I mean, remote sensing of ET is very promising, but I think it's not there yet with the with the level of accuracy that is provided.
Zakaria hopes that the objectives, if successfully achieved, will impact growers in such a way that they'll benefit from adequate accuracy in the determination of orchards' consumptive water use, or ET, irrigation demand, and economic water productivity to ensure reliable water supplies for existing citrus production areas and for future plans. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
For the first time, grape shipments from the Southern Hemisphere have exceeded 1.5 million tons in the 2021 to 2022 season. Of the 1.5 million tons exported, 40% were from Chile, 35% from Peru, 23% from South Africa, and 4% from Brazil, according to Top Info. Chile continues to be the world's leading table grape exporter, with exports reaching almost 600,000 tons. The main destinations are North America with over 50%, Asia with 22%, Europe with 16%, and Latin America with 7%. South Africa has been recording progress in its table grape industry for years. This season, it reached 350,000 tons for the first time, with the main destinations being Europe with 76%, Asia with 12%, followed by North America and Russia. Peru was able to reach 530,000 tons in the table grape exports, with North America taking up 45%, Europe at 25%, Asia with 15%, followed by Canada, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. Brazil reached 63,000 tons this year, with Europe continuing to be its main destination, taking 78%, followed by North America with 15%, and Latin America with 7%. Secretary of State Tony Blinken says the recent grain shipments from Ukraine are a good first step, but small compared with the amount of store grains that the Russians have blocked from export until now. Blinken, speaking to reporters at the UN recently, was asked about the first shipment of grain from Ukraine's major port of Odessa.
This is a good and important first step. We were pleased to see that the first ship did move. It does have 26,000, 27,000 tons of grain, but keep in mind, There are something like 20 million tons that are in silos and in storage in Ukraine that's been held back by the Russian blockade of Odessa up until now, and it needs to get out.
Blinken says the world is depending on it.
It needs to get out to world markets. It needs to get to places where people are in desperate need of food. It needs to get out so the prices also continue to go down, not up.
That will take shipment of much more grain than initial shipments.
It's a start, but the test is now really in the days and weeks ahead. More ships need to move. More grain needs to get to market. That's what will really make a difference.
Since Blinken spoke, two more ships have left or were to leave Ukrainian ports. Blinken praised the UN for brokering the deal through Turkey that eased the Russian blockade. And on that note, global food prices fell by the biggest amount since 2008 due to easing concerns over the supplies of grains and vegetable oils as Ukraine restarted its exports. The United Nations World Food Cost Index dropped almost 9% in July. Bloomberg News says the index is at its lowest level since January before Russia's attack on Ukraine helped to push the cost of food close to record levels. It is the fourth straight monthly drop in a UN index, giving some relief to consumers struggling with a cost of living crisis covering everything from energy to transportation. However, food prices are still high and global hunger is getting worse. Over 50% of the U.S. was in at least some level of drought for the fourth straight week. The U.S. Drought Monitor says the combination of extreme heat and low rainfall is pulling moisture from plants into soil. The western U.S., especially California, remains in a drought that has lasted several years. While drought is an increasing worry in the northeast, midwest, and south, extreme rainfall events are hitting parts of Kentucky and Mississippi. A flash flood warning was issued for St. Louis late last week, thanks to rainfall rates of several inches per hour. Drought also expanded in some parts of the Southern Plains, particularly in Texas, where the consequences are hitting agriculture and cattle ranching. Drought impacts in Texas range from crop failure to water supply problems. The only improvement in the monitor came from heavy rains in the Texas Panhandle, Oklahoma, Arkansas, northern Mississippi, and parts of Tennessee. USDA economist Bart Kenner gives the agricultural export, import, and trade balance numbers for the first 9 months of this fiscal year.
Agricultural exports October through June 2022 were $152.5 billion, which is a 14% increase over the same period in 2021 of $134.3 billion. Agricultural imports through June 22 were $145.4 billion, a 20% increase over the $120.8 billion this time last year, for a trade balance of $7 billion. Which is a $6.4 billion decrease from the $13.5 billion surplus we had through June in fiscal year 21.
USDA economist Bart Kenner.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
The American Farm Bureau Federation recently released a third iteration of their Assessing Western Drought Survey. The 2022 survey received 652 responses across 15 states. AFBF uses this data to communicate with consumers and policymakers. Danny Munch, economist at AFBF, breaks down the data and tells us more about what they found.
American Farm Bureau Federation and its 51 member organizations in all the states in Puerto Rico, when we have things like drought and other weather disasters that impact a lot of our members, sometimes it's very difficult to communicate the impacts of those weather disasters to policymakers, to consumers, and to other stakeholders that it's important to communicate those issues to. And, you know, having numerical data to report on the impacts is also very important. So because that data is not really available through USDA or other avenues, AFBF, we design a survey that we've been releasing. This is the third iteration of the survey that gets sent out to our members in drought impacted regions and ask a whole different bunch of questions about operational level changes farmers and ranchers have had to make in response to drought. There's three sections to the survey: crop specific factors, livestock-specific factors, and general water access factors.
Drought has heavily affected growing conditions across the nation. Munch gives us more details about what drought looks like in California and how it has affected the state's crop production.
When we talk about crop yields and we look at some of the crop-specific factors that our farmers reported on, 74% of respondents rated a reduction in harvest yields due to drought as prevalent or higher in their area. It was about the same as last year when they said 72%. Across the surveyed region, which is 15 states, it's Texas, North Dakota, and then west to California. So all those states were sort of included in the region. Respondents expected average crop yields to be down 38% this year because of drought conditions. The overwhelming majority of our fruits, of our tree nuts and vegetables are all sourced in drought-stricken states like California. And almost 40% of our respondents rated, you know, destroying and bulldozing orchard trees and multi-year crops as prevalent or higher in California. So pretty significant there that farmers are actually at the, you know, it's drought conditions have been so severe that they've started to remove orchards and multi-year crops because there's just no water available. If we look at the number of respondents saying that they've tilled under crops because of drought conditions, that jumped from 24% of respondents last year to 37% respondents this year. So pretty significant jump there. If we looked at the percentage of respondents that reported reduced yields, 71% of respondents from California reported that they were expecting reduced yields, crop yields. 37% of producers in California, they reported that they were going to switch crops that they were planting because of drought conditions. So maybe going from a more water intensive crop like alfalfa to a more drought resistant crop like Sudan grass. 33% of respondents in California reported tilling under crops because of drought conditions. 50%, as I mentioned, reported tilling under or destroying orchard trees and other multi-year crops, which includes things like wine grapes, that nature, because of drought. And then 56 reported that in addition to drought, they've also faced losses from wildfires in California, which is pretty substantial, kind of just compounds the impact of these weather conditions on California producers. And obviously, from a consumer's perspective, when you have so much of this production grown in places like California and Arizona of tree nuts, vegetables, fruits, that's going to result in American consumers paying more for these goods and either partially relying on foreign supplies or shrinking the diversity of items they buy at the store. So drought's not going to impact your entire basket of items, right? You still have a bunch of corn production, soybean production, beef production, other crops that are produced in the eastern U.S., which aren't as impacted by weather. But for things that are only grown in the West, producers might have scarcity when they go to buy those items, unless they're able to make up for it from international purchases. And shifting that production to other states, it's not often feasible because the climate requirements and soil requirements of those crops.
Livestock producers have also been heavily affected by the severe drought conditions. Munch gives us national statistics as well as what livestock producers in California specifically are facing.
When we move on to livestock production, we found that 90% of respondents reported an increase in local feed costs as prevalent or higher in the area. Obviously, whenever you have drought, that impacts the availability and quality of forage, increasing demand pressures and reducing supply pressures, which push up prices. If we look at the number of respondents who were rated, you know, selling off portions of their herd or flock, liquidating their herd because of drought, almost 2/3 reported doing so, about the same as last year. 71% reported they were removing animals from rangeland due to insufficient forage. 72% were traveling long distances to acquire feed and forage. We had one farmer from Utah write about how they were traveling, you know, to Nebraska. Just to get hay at a, you know, super inflated price. 60% of our respondents were hauling water to livestock, and then almost 60% talked about diminished access to public grazing lands. And, you know, so much of our Western states are owned by the federal government. So when there's a reduction in the quality of forage on that land, there's really no other options for farmers to look to graze their cattle unless they ship in hay. So lots of comments and stories from producers about that. Interestingly, we added a few new questions this year about livestock herd reduction dynamics. We asked of those who reduced their herd size last year, since there was also severe drought last year, how many were planning to build back their herd, how many were further reducing their herd, or how many were maintaining that reduced herd size. And we found that of 60% of our respondents that reduced their herd size last year, 50% were further reducing their herd size this year, 37% were maintaining the reduced herd size, and only 14% were building back. So for, you know, the amount of our respondents that reported selling off portions of their herd or flock, 54% of respondents reported that in California. 62% of respondents in California reported removing animals from rangeland due to insufficient forage. 82% of respondents in California, they saw increases in local feed costs linked to drought. Almost 70% were traveling long distances to acquire feed and forage. 55% were hauling livestock. Hauling water to livestock, you know, when you don't have that water availability in streams and some of that surface water that's on your farm, you have to kind of ship it in on trucks. And then 54% had diminished access to public lands grazing in California. So those are some livestock related factors specific to some of our California responses.
The final survey category, general water access, looks at factors like surface water deliveries, ag-based water use restrictions, and groundwater use.
Nationally, surface water deliveries, which when we talk about surface water deliveries, we're talking about only water that's maybe shipped in from the Bureau of Reclamation, not stuff that's pumped up from ground aquifers or anything. So nationally, respondents rated that surface water delivery expectations are going to be down 50% this year from normal. Those factors were highest in New Mexico, Texas, and Oregon, all down about 60%. In California, 75%. Of respondents reported reductions in surface water deliveries. One of the other questions we ask about is increased local restrictions on ag water use. You know, in California, especially Southern California, you have the drought contingency plans in place for the lower Colorado River Basin, where, you know, once you jump into tier three of those curtailments, California has to reduce 4.5% of its water allocations from that river basin. So in our survey, almost 70% of respondents from California reported increased local restrictions on ag water use. And this is an increase from some of those reports from last year, which we expected because, you know, as drought persists, you're going to have more restrictions put on ag water use. If we look at groundwater reliance, on average, nationally, 63% of our respondents said that they were increasing their use of groundwater. 43% were drilling new wells. In California, 77% had an increased use of groundwater, and 63% were drilling new wells. Obviously, if you don't have that surface water, you're going to look for new places to find your water that could be groundwater. Drilling new wells doesn't always guarantee access to new water, and that water could be have a lot of saline content, which is unusable for feeding livestock and irrigating crops. So that's, our farmers commented a lot about those issues. You also have other non-drought related policy issues related to water use, right? You have endangered species implications, where 60% of respondents in California said that a state or federally listed endangered species has reduced their access to surface water. So when you combine that with drought problems, it really compounds the impacts of agricultural producers' access to water to irrigate and to provide water to their livestock. So pretty, you know, these results, you know, it's pretty somber results from our respondents talking about the drought, but it's important for consumers, for policymakers to realize some of the hurdles that producers are facing out west, and some of the implications it could have on food, localized food security, but also on our ability to have access to some of our crops that are produced in those regions.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on the every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.